And now, fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard, hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone.
Chuck Berry getting us underway today on Route 51 as we focus on the challenges, frustrations, opportunities, and hopes facing educators in Wisconsin. The subject is EdCamp Northwoods, a unique event that took place this past weekend in Tomahawk, thanks in part to Wisconsin Public Television. On Saturday, public, private, and homeschool teachers from across the state gathered at EdCamp to talk and share ideas. They had no agenda when they showed up for this conference. They created one on the spot and determined what was important and what was not. And today, we're going to hear the results of those conversations. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guests today are Alyssa Sagong, the Director of Education at Wisconsin Public Television. She's joining us from Madison. Here in our studios, Jennifer Austin, the Instructional Technology Coordinator at Lac de Flambeau Schools, and Peg Billing, the K-12 Library Media Specialist and Instructional Technology Coordinator for the Tomahawk School District. In the next hour, you're going to hear what teachers really think, and we'd like to hear from you, too. What are our schools doing right? And what are they doing wrong? What about the public, private, and homeschool divide? Is it real or is it more imagined? Did you have a teacher in grade school or high school that inspired you and changed your life? If so, what was their approach to teaching? You can give us a phone call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. And I will read it. That's not the Facebook page. I'm sorry. We're now going with our webpage, wpr.org/route51. That page again is wpr.org/route51. But if you put a comment on there, I will read it live on the air. So thank you all three for being with us today.
Good morning. Thank you, Glenn.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Alyssa, let's start with you. You're the Director of Education at Wisconsin Public Television. Tell us a little bit about what you do at Wisconsin Public Television.
Well, Glenn, I have a really great job. Being the Director of Education for Wisconsin Public Television means that my bosses are all the learners in Wisconsin. I work for them, and I work for teachers. And so together, we work to create resources that teachers can use in their classroom that fill curricular needs and are specifically about topics in Wisconsin that there aren't resources that address elsewhere. Digital resources, engaging resources, and then to bring teachers together and elevate their voices. We have amazing teachers in Wisconsin, and it's a privilege to work with them.
How did the organization get involved in EdCamp?
We got involved in EdCamp for a couple of reasons. We noticed that a lot of innovative educators that we were working with on projects were finding this professional development model to be valuable. Teachers were starting EdCamps in different parts of the state. And our colleagues at PBS nationally also identified EdCamp as a really unique opportunity to bring teachers together to improve their practice. And so with the EdCamp Foundation, we decided to put some energy towards supporting existing EdCamps and finding opportunities to host some. We hosted one in Madison at the beginning of February, and then we had reached out and met Jennifer and some of the folks up in the Tomahawk area who were interested in hosting an EdCamp, but were wanting to collaborate to host a more successful event, and we knew that that was the right match for us.
So why did you decide to put one of these camps in northern Wisconsin? Is it because you wanted an alternative to all the teacher development summits that seem to always take place in Madison and Milwaukee?
You hit the nail on the head. There are so many opportunities for conferences in Madison, Milwaukee, Wisconsin Dells. But if you've met any teachers in northern Wisconsin, I think you'll agree that they are just as worthy of convenient PD experiences. And there's incredible innovative educators there that we were excited to have the chance to spend the day with.
Well, tell us about how EdCamp got started. I heard that it started with a group of educators who were engaging with each other in Twitter back in 2010 in Philadelphia.
That's right. And Twitter is something that I'm still learning as a platform, but it is a wonderful way to connect with other teachers and improve your professional practice with ideas and tips and advice and support. And so teachers that were meeting on Twitter thought, how could we take this into an in-person experience? And I think that this is something that really strikes me as an opportunity before us right now, that technology offers really great new avenues for connection and finding other people with shared interest, but it doesn't replace meeting face-to-face and connecting and building relationships in person. And so now we can use these tools to accelerate bigger opportunities in person.
And who can participate? Did the invitation go out to everybody for this event in Tomahawk?
It did. The educators come in many forms. And so anyone who is interested in learning how to serve students was welcome.
Jennifer, in your position as a technology coordinator at Lac des Flambeaux Public School, you provide professional development and technology coaching. You've been there for 19 years. Tell us a little bit about Lac des Flambeaux School and what the needs are for teachers and students there.
Well, we have a pretty diverse teacher background. We have a lot of new teachers and a lot of experienced teachers. And we have worked really hard to integrate technology as a day-to-day for our students. Our students don't get a lot of technology outside of school. We have a lot of areas still in the community that can't get internet access, so kids can't even get that at home. So they have to get it at school. So I work with my teachers not just on technology professional development, but ways to integrate things into their learning and just get them more learning as they want it and need it.
What proportion of your students are Native American?
98%.
98%. And what does that mean for the school? What are the different challenges and the opportunities that poses for a school like Lac des Flambeaux as opposed to a school with a predominantly Anglo population?
Well, we invoke a lot of culture in our school. Our character ed program is based on the seven teachings from the Ojibwe. We have a room in our building called a gathering place that is run by people from the community, and anybody from the community can come into our school and meet with kids. And we have talking circles. So we integrate the culture a lot in what we do. And I think that's a big advantage for us.
Do you think there are enough professional development opportunities for teachers in North Central Wisconsin?
No. I think that in order for us to get professional development, a lot of the time we have to stay overnight somewhere. We have to go down to the Dells. When I first started it with the Ed Camp, the reason I was really into it and wanted to bring it up north was because it was a way to get us some PD that we wouldn't have to stay away from or sleep away from our homes for. Tomahawk has CESA, and they do provide some mm-hmm. professional development for us, and they're awesome. But it's limited to what they can provide.
Explain CESA to folks who might not understand the acronym.
CESA is Cooperative Educational Services Agency, and there are 12 of them in the state, and schools pay them a fee, and they provide services. For example, if you don't have a school psychologist, they have one that goes to different schools, and they have tech resources. They have all kinds of PD resources.
So you can get some things out of CESA,
yes.
But still, the professional development opportunity in Tomahawk must have been something that came as a welcome relief for you.
Well, we've hosted Ed Camp. We did it twice, 2014 and 2015. We did it in Northland Pines. When I came back after my first Ed Camp, I started getting people together from a CESA meeting. I said, hey, mm-hmm. guys, we should try this. And we got a team together, and we hosted two Ed Camps, and they were pretty good, and we really liked it, and we wanted to continue, but we had a hard time recruiting people and getting help to do it, so we took a year off until we got the call from Wisconsin Public Television that asked us if we wanted to do it again, and we jumped.
How'd the event go over the weekend?
Oh, it was fun. It was small. Northwoods Ed Camps are smaller than some of the big city ones, but we learned that no matter how big it is, even small Ed Camps were just so productive and beneficial to everybody who came.
Peg Billing, you're the Library Media Instructional Technology Coordinator for the Tomahawk School District. Tell us a little bit about the role you play and how important it is for students to be engaging in new technologies and current materials.
It's really important for students to be involved with technology because preparing our students for college and career readiness, the workforce uses technology to communicate, to do their work, to be productive, and our students need to be exposed to a variety of technologies. So with that, our district went, I believe it was 5 years ago, to one-to-one, where each student is assigned either a Chromebook or a iPad. The iPads are in the kindergarten and first grade, and second and on up to 12 all have Chromebooks. So they become very proficient in that world and using technology, so it allows them to make connections with each other, work collaboratively through Google Shared document through the cloud, create materials as well, you know, and simply do their assignments.
You oversee three school libraries. That's a pretty big collection of material to look after.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And it's important that we maintain them to be current and relevant, both in print and digital materials. So I make sure that we provide a good variety of e-books for our students as well as, you know, interesting reading materials for students, both for pleasure reading and to meet the curriculum needs of the classroom teacher.
Well, EdCamp Northwoods was held at Tomahawk Middle School, so you didn't have far to drive.
It was great.
What do you think of the experience?
I thought it was wonderful. It was a great chance for us at Tomahawk to, you know, show some of the unique things that we do. Last year, I was fortunate enough through WTI, which is Wisconsin Technology Initiative, to receive a grant, and we redid our middle school library and have a really awesome collaborative space in there, which our students absolutely love. And it was great to have teachers from around the Northwoods, you know, come and see it because we all are so separated and so unique in our roles, and all of us wear so many different hats, which is not unique to us at Tomahawk. It's very common. And it was a neat opportunity for us to, you know, like I said, show off some of the things that we do, get ideas from other people.
But were there other school librarians there? Jennifer was saying it was kind of a small gathering.
There were three others, and that was awesome because, again, I'm the only certified person at Tomahawk, and I'm fortunate enough to have aides in my libraries that maintain it daily for me and meet with the students daily. And meeting other professionals to talk shop is pretty rare.
Alyssa, how is EdCamp different from other professional development opportunities for teachers? Do you think it's more effective than traditional models?
I do think it's more effective, and I think it's because the sessions are coming directly from the teachers. And so they're about their needs and what they want to talk about and what's relevant for their community. It is wonderful to get an inspiring talk by a national speaker or some educational rock star, but to be able to collaborate, like Peg just shared, with people who really understand the unique opportunities and challenges of the region that you live in and the student population. I think that the topics that they generate are more rich. Some of the sessions that were pitched by the teachers that attended and that we had at the Ed Camp included behavior challenges, personalized learning, literacy, ideas for using Chromebooks in the classroom. And so everyone's a learner and everyone's a teacher in this format, and I think that it is truly effective.
And the way I understand it, this involves kind of an open dialogue instead of a top-down instructional model. What's the advantage of that?
I think that the advantage is that you really elevate all of the expertise in the room. And there is a lot of expertise in these teachers who are professionals. And one of my favorite outcomes, and some of the educators who I sat with at lunch were sharing, they had driven from Wausau, and they were working on personalized learning solutions for their third grade classrooms as sort of pioneers in their district. And they told me that being at an event like this reminded them that they're not alone in striving for innovation and they're not islands. They have a network now of other educators from the Northwoods that they can collaborate and connect with. And that's a wonderful outcome.
So let me try to get a feeling from the three of you about how this works. The teachers, as I understand it, meet in the morning. They don't even have an agenda, so they create one themselves, and then they end up with a series of conferences and sessions throughout the day. So, Jennifer, why don't you give me an idea of how this works? How do you come up with an agenda when you go in there and nobody's got one?
Well, we start with an empty grid with the number of sessions and however many rooms we have, and we hand out post-it notes or whatever. Teachers write down their ideas and come up to bring them up, and then there's a few people, the organizers, who read all the post-it notes and start combining like ideas and start filling in the session board. Depending on the ed camp, sometimes the session board, we fill in the first sessions right away and leave some afternoon opportunities because people will propose sessions throughout the day. So as a teacher going to an ed camp, you start thinking about what would I like to learn about? And it just kind of naturally develops. Everybody starts, as ideas start getting generated, people start coming up with more ideas and they write them on the session board, and then everybody has a link to it. And it's all Google Docs based, so it's a shared format. And there's a common notes page. So once they go into a session, they will either designate a note taker or anybody, and anybody can take notes. They pull up the sheet and they start taking notes so that if you couldn't get to the one session, you could see what was talked about. Or if there's cool resources, you could go look them up later.
So what were some of the sessions that you found most valuable?
I went to one on microbits, which is something relatively new, and it's a coding thing. And I'm in the process with my librarian at our school to get a makerspace going for our students. And we have a lot of kids who really want to do some coding. So I really enjoyed learning more about these microbits. I didn't know they existed. And that conversation led to some other things. And as a group, we did a little bit of research and looked into some 3D pens and into just some other bits and pieces. And that session was probably the most valuable. But we did have a wonderful lady came up from Richland Center and did merge cubes, which are new. And we could get them at Walmart at one point for a dollar each, which is great for teachers.
So new that I don't even know what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
they're these little there's these little foam cubes with a similar to like a QR code on it. And a kid takes a tablet or a phone and uses it to view the code on the thing. And then it pulls up an augmented reality object. So it's like a 3D beating heart with all the different parts marked. So if you're studying the heart in biology, you take your tablet, you put it on this cube, and you can see what a heart looks like. And it was kind of creepy that it was actually beating, but it was fun at the same time.
Pretty neat. Peg, what did you find most valuable out of the sessions?
Well, one of the sessions that we offered at Tomahawk is I had set up a STEM or a STEAM lab, which is science, technology, engineering, math, and art lab, and had lots of different activities out for the teachers to see and experience and try and get your hands dirty and do it, and then talk about, well, this activity is really focusing in third grade and it's focusing on forces of motion or, you know, whatever the concept area is related directly to the curriculum. And it gave an opportunity for people to exchange ideas and, again, talk about not just this activity we're doing, but how it relates and provides experiences for students for authentic learning.
Did either of you lead a session?
Not this time.
I did with the STEM lab.
You did?
Yes.
And we understand, too, that participants can vote with their feet. In
Absolutely,
other words,
yes.
If they don't like what they're hearing or they don't think it's valuable, they can get up and go to another session.
Yep.
How did people vote with their feet at the session that you led?
Well, I was busy, so I can't say I saw anybody get up and leave.
All right, well, that's
a good thing.
But I
certainly saw a lot of hands that were busy.
Well, according to one study, students with highly effective teachers are more likely to make money, more likely to attend college, more likely to save for retirement, to live in better neighborhoods, and avoid teen pregnancy. So the impact of having an effective teacher can significantly close the opportunity gap between low-income students and their more affluent peers. If we don't take care of our teachers, the implication is there's a potentially negative ripple effect that could go out through the entire community. Jennifer, at Lac de Flambeau School, talk about how important good teachers are for the kids.
There's just no way I can stress how important it is. Our district, our students, we have a very high free and reduced lunch rate, one of the highest in the state. And so we also provide, by the way, one-to-one Chromebooks for our students so that they can have as much experience with all of these things as they can. Our administration is very good at hiring great people. We have so many wonderful people on our staff. The new teachers from last year, I've worked a lot with them, and I'm just so impressed at how much everybody cares so much. And it shows, and people want to learn. And teachers are working on professional development all the time, even if they don't go to this conference or even a conference. They're going online and pulling in classes, and they're using whatever they have. They're getting together and doing it themselves.
And Peg Billing, same question for you. Comment on the impact an individual teacher can have on a student's life.
I think it is incredibly important. I mean, just think of your own personal experiences. Every one of us, I'm sure, can think of a teacher at some point in their lives that really impacted them, and you think about them today as an adult. And I feel that our teachers at Tomahawk do an incredible job with reaching out and connecting to the kids. They care about the kids of the community. And I think that's one thing that's really unique about our community at Tomahawk is that our whole complex is one long building, and it is the largest building complex in the community, so it is heavily used and supported by the community, which really builds that personal connection as well between the students, the teachers, and the community members, which I think it's really all three that really make a strong learning environment. You know, if we don't have the support of the community, it shows, and the caringness of the teachers, you know, the teachers really truly care for the kids and are looking out for them. And
Alyssa Savelli, I'd like you to weigh in on this, too. The importance of an individual teacher in a student's life and the importance of teachers to the community as a whole.
Gosh, can I have the rest of the hour to
yeah.
talk about that? Because
it'll make my job easier.
Truly. I mean, Glenn, this is it. And I think that Peg makes a really good point. I think we can all look at our own personal stories. I was fortunate to have teachers throughout my life who encouraged and supported and gave me feedback. And I know how important it is. As a parent, I watch my children's teachers push them to new heights and encourage them and teach them. This is essential. It's foundational. And I think that in public media, we look at our responsibility to follow in the footsteps that were created by our predecessors at WPR, who were creating content 100 years ago for students like Let's Draw. We look to Fred Rogers as someone who knew that it was essential that there was a safe, trusted place for children with developmentally appropriate content. That's our responsibility. And I love the way that Peg describes the community gathering in Tomahawk to really make sure that there are many adults in young people's lives that are protecting and supporting them.
Today,
teachers are crucial to that.
Today on Route 51, we're talking about EdCamp Northwoods, a unique educational summit held this past weekend in Tomahawk with Alyssa Sagong. She's the Director of Education for Wisconsin Public Television, Jennifer Austin, Instructional Technology Coordinator at Lac de Flambeau School, and Peg Billing, the K-12 Library Media Specialist and Instructional Technology Coordinator for the Tomahawk School District. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or put a comment on the Route 51 webpage, wpr.org/Route 51. We're going to take a short break. Here's Sam Cooke.
History. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
Oh, teacher, teacher, why are you so poor? Oh, teacher, teacher, why are you so poor?
When it comes to unions, you're an amateur. Now unions are for workers, but a teacher has prestige. Oh, unions are for workers, but a teacher has prestige. He can feed his kids on that old noblesse oblige.
That's Pete Seeger taking us into the next segment of Route 51 as we talk about a unique educational summit, Ed Camp North Woods, held this past weekend in Tomahawk. Our guests today are Alyssa Sagong. She's the Director of Education for Wisconsin Public TV. Jennifer Austin, Instructional Technology Coordinator at Lac de Flambeau Schools. And Peg Billing, the K-12 Library Media Specialist and Instructional Technology Coordinator for the Tomahawk School District. I'm Glenn Moberg. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742.
Got the teacher's blues, those blues are on my mind. I got the teacher's blues, those blues are on my mind. 'Cause inflation's got me, done left me far behind.
Well, I want to use that Pete Seeger song as kind of a jumping off point to a discussion for this segment. I'd like your input. Jennifer, let's start with you. Do you think teachers are underpaid or at times underappreciated?
Honestly, I think it depends on what district you're in. But in many, they're not paid equivalent to people in the private sector with the same level of education, especially with how much education a teacher is required to have just to stay in the profession.
And Peg, what's your attitude?
I would agree with that as well. I mean, I think pay, I mean, obviously is very important, and districts are sometimes, I think, slow to, but also looking at the economics of it.
Well, you know, Seeger was a big union supporter. He wrote Teacher Blues during a time before teachers formed unions. You know, the verse was, when it comes to unions, you're an amateur. In the latter part of the 20th century, teachers did unionize, and their pay and working conditions improved. What's the status right now? Are pay and working conditions still improving, or do you think teachers are slipping backwards?
Honestly, I think that with the teacher shortage going on in this state, depending on your specialty, everybody's becoming free agents and are negotiating their own contracts, which is a good thing for some people and not for others. And again, it depends on the district and the community and what they're willing to pay for people.
I agree. Alyssa Sagong, what's your point of view on this? We've you know, this is something that's come up with discussions about public education, private education for years now. Teachers are not appreciated; they're not paid what they should be. Some statistics bear that out.
Sure, and Glenn, I'm not in a position to weigh in on pay, but I think it is my responsibility to weigh in on appreciation, and that's something that I take very seriously in my role, and my team here at Wisconsin Public Television takes very seriously, that these are dedicated professionals that are worthy of our support and admiration. What they do in their classrooms, they are tireless advocates for their students, and they are curious and demonstrate how to transmit the fire of curiosity from their own passion and commitment to learning to their kids. This is crucial work. And so any opportunity that we have to elevate their voice and to share their story, what you're doing today in having these wonderful educators on your program is a piece of that. And I'm really grateful that you're celebrating these two wonderful educators on your show today.
All right. Well, thank you so much. What is the morale like for teachers? And is the union? I assume that you're in a union, Jennifer.
Actually, personally, I'm still part of the statewide union. But at our district, we were decertified. We just didn't have enough support. And but again, every district is different.
Mm-hmm.
And some school boards and administration treat their staff and have the money to treat their staff better than others do. So it didn't, like at our school, it didn't have as much of an adverse effect as my friends who work in other some other districts.
Peg, are you a member of a union? Or I know with Act 10, with the measure that was passed that stripped a lot of public employee unions of their power, a lot of unions did end up decertifying, and the ones that are left didn't have the kind of power or influence that they used to have.
At Tomahawk, we still have the union, although I'm not a member of it. In the whole Act 10, I actually lived out of state and taught in a different state at that time, so I was the outsider looking in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting because I have family members who are also in education. And, you know, it was very interesting. It seems to be definitely a national conversation, as we see in the news today.
Well, that's one reason why I'm bringing all of this up. We have teacher strikes that are happening in a variety of different states, and you can't do a show about education and ignore what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about the conditions in some classrooms and see whether or not this applies to any place that you know of in Wisconsin. And I'm going to use another song. Pete Seeger had another song about teachers and specifically about overcrowded classrooms and a lack of funding by state government. Let's listen to a bit of it. It's a takeoff on the old Merle Travis song, 16 Tons. It's called 42 Kids.
Now some people say a teacher's made out of steel, but a teacher's made of stuff that can think and feel. A mind and a body and a tortured soul. The ability to teach the shy and the bold. I teach 42 kids, and what do I get? Another day older and a deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me to that heavenly gate. I owe my soul to the youth of this state. I was born one morning, it was cloudy and cool. I picked up my register and walked to the school. I wrote 42 names on my class roll. My superintendent said, well, bless my soul, 42 kids, and what do I get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me to that celestial shore. I got 42 students and they're sending me more.
Is school overcrowding a serious problem in some institutions? And did anybody talk about that at Ed Camp over the weekend?
I can't say I heard any conversation on that. And that song, I think, is cute. And I'm really glad at Tomahawk we don't have 42 kids in a classroom.
Good,
because
good.
That would never fit in a room. We do sometimes have larger classes, and each year there's a bubble. You know, there's a bubble of second graders. No, I just stop and think. It was the first graders last year, of course, and they all moved up. And each year, it's
certain
just
classes
varies.
There are more kids than mm-hmm. others, and that poses a challenge for administrators.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
Jennifer, at Lac de Flambeau schools, is there an overcrowding problem at all?
Honestly, I don't really feel like. I mean, we have some classes that are just like Peg said. There are some grade levels where we have just a lot of kids, and it's hard to balance that load. And we work on really trying to do that with all kinds of methods of intervention mm-hmm. and that. And it gets harder the more kids you have to do more of the – we're a personalized learning institution. We try to gear things towards the needs of the individual. And it's really hard when you have 18 individuals in your class without support to individualize your working – you know, I have teachers that are working there at the school until 6-7 o'clock every night, getting work done, just trying to get ready for the next day, and keeping in touch with the parents and, you know, all of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the New York Times collected testimonials from teachers across the nation. This was just published, and they sent in pictures from some parts around the country. And I don't know if any of this applies to any school districts in Wisconsin. I would suppose it does in some. But they sent in pictures of textbooks that were duct taped together, some over a decade old, leaking ceilings, broken desks, and more. And I'm going to read a couple of the comments from the teachers. Michelle Gibar of the Rio Rico High School in Arizona said, and this is a quote, I have 148 students this year. The district skipped textbook adoption for the high school English department, leaving us with 10-year-old class sets, and we don't have enough for the students to take them home. As I near retirement age, I realize I will retire at the poverty level. Kelsey Pavelka of Wilhelm Elementary in North Las Vegas, Nevada, said, I have six laptops for 42 fifth-grade students. So she's got 42 in one class, with many broken keys and chargers. Catherine Vaughn, an art teacher in Tennessee, a quote from her, "Teaching art to about 800 students on a $100-a-year budget is difficult. I drive a 15-year-old car, and despite all that, even with my master's degree, some months we are not food secure." And Abby Sillo, who's an elementary school teacher in Aurora, Colorado, said, "My third-grade students are in a mobile classroom that is basically a trailer. There's 25 students in a classroom the size of a hotel room. All of the bathrooms are still in the main building, so my 8- and 9-year-olds have to walk outside unattended unless we stop class to take group bathroom breaks." So those are teachers around the country, and I'm wondering if any of that is happening in Wisconsin. Jennifer, what do you think?
I don't personally know of something to that extent. I do know there's a couple of really old buildings around the state. I've talked to friends, and there are some crumbling infrastructure. I have one person who they've been trying to get a referendum passed, and they can never get their referendums passed. And they can't plug in a Chromebook cart because the electrical mm-hmm. infrastructure in the building is so old that they'll blow everything out just trying to charge a cart of Chromebooks for a class. So it's interesting to hear that, and I feel bad. And I just feel fortunate when I hear those stories.
Peg, anything equivalent to those horror stories that I just shared with you?
I have to agree with Jennifer. I can't say I've personally heard of anything like that around the state. But I think in the Northwoods, I think we're a little bit more unique in that schools have done referendums and majority of them have passed, which really illustrates how the communities support the schools up here. And that support is desperately needed. I mean, it is needed to make our schools be open and running and our teachers to have the materials. Yes, we could all use more money in our classrooms and more money to support us. And obviously, you know, a little bit more on the salary side certainly would not be turned away.
Alyssa Sagong, I didn't want to really include you in this part of the discussion because I know that's not your role with Wisconsin Public Television. But do you have a reaction to what we've just talked about in terms of some of these things that have been published and apparently are happening in at least some places around the country?
Yeah, those stories are really heartbreaking to hear. And I think that in my travels around the state, you know, I know that we have 424 public school districts in Wisconsin. So I can only speak from my personal experience. And in the private schools that I've spent time in the public school districts and the time I've spent with homeschool educators, I meet people who really care about their schools and their communities. The folks that I meet when I travel the state are so thrilled that we're working to support teachers and students. And I think that Peg and Jen spoke to that in that they feel very supported by their communities. Wisconsin is a wonderful place to live, and I'm proud to be here.
Let's examine one more thing. We've heard that teachers often end up supplementing supplies in their classrooms with her own money. And going back to this New York Times article, Beth Etzler, who's an elementary school teacher in Palacios, Texas, wrote, "Our classroom budgets have been cut to about $200 per classroom. In our supply closet, it's rare to find tape, and you'll never find construction paper. Seeing my classroom would lead people to think things are great because my room is well supplied." And she says, "It is. It's supplied with my paycheck." And she estimates that she spends $2,000 of her own money on school supplies for kids. Jennifer, have you heard of anything like that happening?
Yes. Back when I was in the classroom, I supplemented. We get a budget. And there were times I just went and picked some things up. And it wasn't necessarily that it was high necessity items, because I believe if I went to my administration and demonstrated the necessity, they'd probably find the money for it. But there was times when I just would enrichment items and things, and I still spend money out of my mm-hmm. pocket, even though I'm not in the classroom. But it's not in those kind of – it's not as bad as those kind of situations. I do it more voluntarily.
And Peg, what does it say about teachers that they'd be willing to do that in situations where they had to?
I think it really supports and shows how incredibly dedicated people are to education. the teachers today, you're in it because you truly love it.
Yeah, we don't.
And you love the kids and you want them to learn.
I don't think anybody goes into the profession for the bucks.
No.
Alyssa, what do you think of the comments you just heard, that teachers willing to go the extra mile in order to make sure their kids have what they need?
I can definitely attest to that from my personal experience, that many educators will do whatever it takes to foster learning.
And bringing it back to Ed Camp is a Saturday. People give up a Saturday. They don't get paid to go there. Their schools aren't paying their mileage or anything else. And so that's just teachers are dedicated to improving themselves and their conditions in their classroom.
I totally agree. And if you look at the weather from this past Saturday, it was gorgeous. But the people that were there wanted to learn and chose to come rather than do something outside because it was our first beautiful Saturday of the year. And people wanted to be there, wanted to share, wanted to experience the opportunity to grow and to learn, collaborate with others, make connections, and get ideas to help their kids, because there's going to be something that was shared at that Ed Camp that someone, you know, was seeking out or wanted to make a connection, because learning today is all about making connections and helping our kids see that so they're you know, great for the future workforce.
Today on Route 51, we're talking about Ed Camp Northwoods, a unique educational summit held this past weekend in Tomahawk, with Alyssa Sagong of Wisconsin Public Television, Jennifer Austin of the Lac des Flambeaux Schools, and Peg Billing, the K-12 Library Media Specialist for the Tomahawk School District. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're going to take a short break. Here are the Beach Boys.
When someone tries to put me down and says the school is great, I tell him right away, now what's the matter, buddy? Ain't you heard of my school? It's number one in the state.
Soup, taking us into our final segment of Route 51. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're talking about Ed Camp Northwoods with Jennifer Austin of Lac des Flambeaux Schools, Peg Billing of the Tomahawk School District, and Alyssa Sagong of Wisconsin Public Television. Alyssa, this was deliberately held up in the Northwoods in a place with rural school districts. What do you think the challenges are for rural school districts that are different than the challenges facing more urbanized districts?
Well, I think you have the experts there with you in Peg and Jennifer, and that is part of what I hope to learn in spending my day there. I think that the rural districts, you know, Jennifer mentioned earlier one of the challenges in access to reliable internet. And that's something that, frankly, here in Madison didn't occur to our team so directly until we spent time in districts like Lac des Flambeaux and got that feedback from teachers. And that's why we started strategies here at WPT Education in doing things like putting content onto flash drives that we can distribute for free, or making media resources that are downloadable so that you can access them at home. If you're a teacher who's working late at night, you don't have to be in your school building to be creating your lesson plans with content that we make. And so really being there and listening to things like that helps us make more effective content for classrooms.
Jennifer, with a small rural school, sometimes there are only a few students per square mile. They've got to be transported long distances, yet the districts still have to maintain school buildings and pay the utility costs.
Yes, I know that Up in the Lakeland area where Lactoflambeau was part of, we are actually 5 school districts, 4 elementaries and 1 high school, and each of them is a separate district. And that high school district is geographically one of the largest in the state, and their transportation costs are insane. So, yeah, we have kids still riding a bus 45 minutes or more just to get to school each day because of the distance. The reservation is pretty spread out.
And we've got sparsity aid, which helps those small districts. They pay them more per student, and I think the number is going up from $300 to $400 per student. That's got to help. That's one of Governor Walker's initiatives.
Yes, everything helps. Every time we get any kind of money, it helps, and it goes to good causes where you're not just burning it off on frivolous items.
Peg Billing?
I totally agree. Having that extra sparsity aid does help for the district. And we are, too, one of the larger districts, square miles-wise. Our kids are on the bus a long time. Once you get outside the city limits, equitable access, Wi-Fi goes down to pretty much nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's why we as a district chose to use the Chromebooks, because the kids have then the ability to download. We have very good Wi-Fi at our district, public access to it. You can sit in the parking lot and use it. Not that we're promoting that, but but we make it that way so that when the building is closed, our kids still can get at the materials that they need in the digital world, because that's the world we live in, and we need to be able to provide that and support that. You know, that access to information is so critical.
The internet access doesn't just affect the homes. Our school building itself, we were at 100 megabits for the entire building, which is actually kind of slow, and we had limitations. And for years, we have been battling, and our superintendent talked to people in Madison, and we've been getting promised faster internet, and we finally just got faster internet in our building last week. So we're finally starting to join the modern age in our school itself. I mean, I have teachers that don't have internet at home, can't do their grades. So,
Alyssa Sagong, what did you folks at Wisconsin Public Television learn at this last EdCamp, the EdCamp Northwoods, and are we going to go forward and have more of them?
Oh, I had a day full of learning, and I think some things that really inspired me were one educator from, I believe he's from Eagle River, was sharing how he's taken it on to grow professionally in computer sciences as something that he sees as a need for getting students career ready for jobs in Wisconsin, and he was sharing those tools with other educators that attended. I personally had a wonderful time in Peg's STEAM lab and learned how to use this wonderful tool called Squishy Circuits, which is Play-Doh that can conduct electricity. And so you can learn how to build a circuit using colorful Play-Doh and LED lights and battery packs. And so I tried and failed and then learned and adjusted and was able to build a little lit-up city out of Play-Doh at a table. That was the highlight of my day.
Pretty cool. And we've got more of these to come.
Yes, absolutely.
I want to thank all three of you for being with us today. We are completely out of time. We want to thank our guests, Alyssa Sagong, the Director of Education at Wisconsin Public Television, Jennifer Austin, the Instructional Technology Coordinator at Lactoflambeau School, and Peg Billing of the Tomahawk School District. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our show producer and on-air producer, Jana Schleiss. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Graham Parker, Chuck Berry, Sam Cooke, Pete Seeger, The Beach Boys, Bowling for Soup, and Alice Cooper. Next week on Route 51, we look ahead to Beyond the Headlines, a series of programs bridging the gap between law enforcement and the media. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we're heading out of town.